KEHE is impartial and assumes no responsibility nor liability for statements made on the following program. The People's Voice comes to you four times daily, 9:30 a.m., 12:30 noon, 7 and 11 p.m. It is compiled under direction of Clifford E. Clinton. Civic is at your service in any matter pertaining to honest, efficient government. And now you hear the voice of Mr. Clinton's son, Edmund.
The 1172nd broadcast of the People's Voice is delivered to thousands of volunteer precinct workers gathered in hundreds of homes in Los Angeles at 7 o'clock Thursday evening and will be rebroadcast at 11 o'clock Thursday evening, 9:30 a.m. and 12:30 noon Friday, in order that those who listen in at these periods may learn of the important work at hand. Now hear my dad, Clifford E. Clinton.
We now launch our campaign for the election of a city council which will replace the obstructionists to the people's program. We have set our hands to the plow. The harvest is in your keeping. Soon you will learn, as others before you, that the traitor's curse is the patriot's badge of honor. You will understand why it is that in all the tides of time, no hypocrite ever burned at the stake.
Those who hold special privilege dearer than a free city would today divert your attention from the worthiness of your cause and your candidates to the alleged unworthiness of Clifford Clinton, who seeks no public office. They would dodge an accusation by condemning the accuser.
What I am is of little public moment. I seek nothing from any candidate nor from anyone else. In fact, we tie no strings and insist that no one else does either. I might be all they claim, and if I were, the unworthiness, or the worthiness, I should say, of your candidates and the advancement of the program that you have entrusted to your fearless fighting Mayor Fletcher Bowron are the matters of great public moment, and that is the issue. You who have followed the 1172 radio programs in which we have presented facts that you have seen proven of corruption in high places have never been deceived as to who was paying for them. You who circulated the petitions by which Civic helped bring about the recall of Frank Shaw, who followed the course of costly litigation, heard the reports of fact finders, visited our headquarters, solicited our aid, wrote us letters, know that these services cost money. Know that they were paid for in the main out of the private incomes of those of us who for more than 2 years have actively taken up the trail of the invisible government and have pledged to follow it to the end. Today, the service is costing us some $100 a day. We are not complaining. We are simply explaining that this expense is in no way a slush fund for the election of candidates, but an endowment of municipal research similar to those established by many like-minded citizens in many American cities. Anyone else doing what has been done would have suffered the same avalanche of abuse from forces of the underworld and from the Los Angeles Times. The opposition but confirms us in our determination to carry on. The magnitude of a crime is measured by the lengths to which its perpetrators will go to destroy a citizen who dares to oppose it. The crime of Civic is that it helped you unmask the Shaw machine and expose the underworld government and urged forward honest public servants in driving thieves, corruptionists, and gangsters from the civic temple. If my listeners were cynics who believe that none will serve except for private gain, that no man will place his honor above his honors or tread the path of duty as he sees it, though he go barefoot and alone, you would not be gathered by the thousands to hear this message, prepared to make your sacrifice of time and money in this worthy cause. Since you desire no reward but honest government, you will credit others with similar sincerity. And believe me when I state that I have no other desire in the work we have undertaken together.
It is not possible, nor is it wise, that Civic or your candidates bear the cost of this campaign. You are met tonight to launch a drive to finance a people's campaign for people's candidates in order that they may be obligated to none but the people themselves.
Lest we become so embroiled in the dust and smoke of battle that we lose sight of our objective, let us pause momentarily to gain new resolve from a backward glance at obstacles already surmounted. 2 years ago, a minority of the Los Angeles grand jury, called from private life and business interests, surveyed the panorama of organized corruption in Los Angeles, sought the support of Mayor Shaw, and recoiled from his icy declaration
that there was no protected vice of corruption in Los Angeles.
Suddenly, we the accusers and our witnesses, called by law to perform a civic duty, found ourselves the accused. It was as if a hunter placing his hounds upon the trail should suddenly open fire upon them in order to let the quarry escape. We and our witnesses and co-workers were investigated, jailed, cursed, ridiculed, intimidated, beaten, stoned, and finally bombed, charged with political ambitions and unworthy motives, spied upon and harassed by police acting under orders. We exposed corruption and were cited for contempt. One witness bringing indisputable evidence was charged with mental derangement. Another was sent to jail for signing an affidavit. An editor who swore to facts was ruined. His home was stoned. A spy house was rented, dictaphones installed, telephones tapped. My own home was bombed, and finally corruption overreached itself with a brazen attempt at murder, with an infernal machine cunningly hidden in the automobile of a witness who knew inside facts about the very citadel of the underworld overlords themselves, and on and on. And at last the dam was pierced and small streams of truth started forth. The people heard and gave the answer which a free people always give to the forces of anarchy in their midst when they find it.
Frank Shaw was recalled. Mayor Bowron was elected. The miracle was accomplished.
Racketeer Lushing on the Board of Water and Power was convicted. Amar, president of the Harbor Commission, was convicted of feloniously permitting his property to house a gambling dive. The chief of police hastily retired before the first meeting of a new police commission. Police henchmen skipped bail and left the country. The trial of the mayor's brother and secretary and commissioners for the sale of jobs and the falsification of civil service records were opened.
But the defeat was not decisive. The lines of the corruptionists reformed. The filth batteries were manned by new mercenaries. Thus reinforced, a majority of the city council established a blockade against the people's mayor, loosed new tirades of vilification against one Clifford Clinton. Mayor Bowron took his case to the people over this radio station, asked for your help in smashing the second line of defense of the Shaw regime, the obstructionists and blockaders in the city council.
And that is how it comes that we are met tonight to carry on the battle of the People's Army, re-enlisting for a new campaign. In this campaign, Civic asked no candidate to file, asked for no commitment other than that the candidates endorsed be free to follow their own reason and conscience. Because those candidates are free, they are not financed by those who heretofore have purchased special privilege with campaign funds. These candidates dedicated themselves to aid Mayor Bowron carry out the people's mandate and his determination to streamline the city government with non-skid councilmen and then devote themselves to the great controversial problems which lie ahead. They have no slush fund, but they have what is infinitely more precious. A people's army fighting for its ideals and its homes, visioning that future beyond and above the battle. The rainbow promise of a better city where honest citizens dare challenge crime without being branded from the housetops as criminals. Where parents and teachers may direct the gaze of youth to public servants and say with pride,
follow their example. Make of your life such a life of service.
The victory ahead is but a new beginning, an open door of opportunity for your children and for mine. Ideals do count. Have faith.
For the cause is still right, we know. And now a brief message on the task we must do from Aldrich Blake.
Citizens of Los Angeles, professional politicians today, stand amazed at what is happening at this gigantic gathering of the hosts of good government throughout the city. They know that they could not have accomplished in months what you have done in a few weeks. They could not have done with gold what you have done with loyalty. Your opponents are frantic with dismay and alarm. In the hundreds of meetings in the homes of citizens tonight, there is no sputtering of a cold motor. When you put your foot upon the starter, there is no stalling, no backfiring. We can hear the engine purr, see the road ahead. You will encounter a few bad stretches of road, a few detours, but the road is well marked by your precinct leaders. Yours is the victory on April 4th. If your precinct has been missed or you have not been notified of the meeting place, please report immediately to the candidate endorsed by Civic in your councilmanic district. Our organization has been largely spontaneous. If you know the location of your precinct meeting and could not attend at 7 o'clock, go as soon as you can and take your part. American civilization is founded on the home. Democratic government is founded on the precinct neighborhood meetings, in the homes of citizens who realize their civic obligations. In the work ahead, you will find new friends, new opportunities to know your neighbors. Be a leader in the organized drive of the People's Army against venal political forces whose clutching fingers are being torn from the throat of a people's government. Tonight, you begin your drive to collect in small contributions, at least $10 in each precinct. You are asked to do this to emancipate your homes and your government from the dictation of slush fund contributors who buy immunity from the law when they finance the campaigns of subservient councilmen. This drive for small contributions, dimes, quarters, dollars, is rousing the opposition to fury and denunciation. The literature, headquarters, rent, and advertising of your candidates will be paid for by you. If the candidates did not ask you for anything but your votes, you could well suspect that special privilege was waiting in the background, expecting its payoff after election. Where a candidate's financial bankers are, there also is his heart. That is why it is unsafe for anyone but yourselves to finance the candidates you have chosen to support. Aside from a few dollars to cover general organization, every penny collected by you will be turned over to the council district whence it came.
May I interrupt a moment, Mr. Blake? It has just been reported that the precinct 1826 has already raised its precinct fee of $10 and expect to do even better, they say.
Well, that's real action. It shows what can be done. Congratulations to precinct 1826, first to go over the top. My recollection is that this precinct is in the 11th district where Harold Harvey is Civic's endorsee. Precinct leaders have been provided with copies of the precinct fee report. We want the name, address, and amount given by every contributor. These records will be kept on file for public inspection. We have no secrets. If for any reason you do not have the printed copies of the precinct fee report, be sure when you send in the money that the names, addresses, and amounts of the contributions are contained in your letter. If you are not attending your precinct meeting tonight, send your contribution, however small, direct, and it will be credited to your council district. Please give the name of your candidate or the number of your council district. Be sure that all remittances reach the Civic Committee at 618 South Olive Street by March 23rd. If by then the full amount has not been collected, send what you can and finish the job later. But be sure to finish it. The enemy is on the run. The fact that they are calling you snoopers and accusing you of organizing a second Tammany in your homes tonight is the best evidence. Tammany halls are not built that way. Treason does not start in neighborhood meetings, but in back rooms where the payoff is divided, the jobs and pelf distributed. Friends of decency and clean government, you are thrice armed whose cause is just. We hear the call of bugles in a million hearts, the drum roll of a people's pulse, the tramp, tramp, tramp of marching feet. The people are on the march. When the people march, their power is irresistible. Let's call the roll of candidates.
In the first district,
Delamere Francis McCloskey.
Second,
Norris J. Nelson.
Third,
Stephen Cunningham.
Fourth,
Robert L. Burns.
Fifth,
Arthur E. Briggs.
Sixth,
Chalene V. Eckerson.
Seventh,
Carl C. Rasmussen.
Eighth,
Evan Lewis.
Ninth,
Jack Berman.
Tenth,
G. Vernon Bennett.
11.
Harold Harvey.
12.
Ralph Gray.
13.
Roy Hampton.
14.
George Knox Roth.
Board of Education.
Lawrence L. Larrabee, Leah Lovell, Elizabeth McManus, and John L. Bogue.
KEHE is impartial and assumes no responsibility nor liability for statements made on the foregoing program. KEHE is impartial and assumes no responsibility nor liability for statements made on the following program. The People's Voice comes to you four times daily, 9:30 a.m., 12:30 noon, 7 and 11 p.m. It is compiled under direction of Clifford E. Clinton. And now you hear the voice of Mr. Clinton's son, Edmund.
Ernest Chamberlain will open our 1176th broadcast by interviewing Roy Hampton of the 13th District and Carl C. Rasmussen of the 7th District.
Mr. Hampton, you are one of the youngest candidates seeking election from the oldest district in Los Angeles. Problems of the 13th District represent the poles of civic interest. An old-timer writes, "Where did this young whippersnapper get the idea that he was qualified for the council? Why is our district number 13 anyway? Are we going to be jinxed again?"
Oh, no. This time we sink the jinx and make 13 the lucky number. But seriously, I would like to discuss my qualifications. I am 38 years old, have a wife and a son. It was 13 years ago that I graduated from USC and passed my bar examination. I have had pretty general experience. Served in the Marine Corps during the World War, worked in the Long Beach shipyards. I worked in my father's produce business and was a newspaper reporter on rural and metropolitan newspapers.
At your age, Alexander Hamilton was Secretary of the Treasury and Alexander the Great had conquered the world. But does your experience in the produce business sum up your business experience? After all, Los Angeles is a $400 million business.
I have had special financial training. Before entering private law practice, I was trust counsel for the Metropolitan Trust Company, dealing with the administration of vast trust funds. I have had extensive legal practice in important cases in state and federal courts.
What about social problems? Your district not only contains a civic center, you know, large industries, but also many poor homes, many fine minority groups, Italians, Mexicans, Jews, Chinese, and Japanese.
And some Negroes. Yes, health, housing, and hunger are serious problems in the district. My work with the trust company introduced me not only to the technical problems of real estate, valuation, and taxation, but also led me to study specially the housing and slum clearing. I have also devoted much study to the vital needs of the district for community health clinics.
What about engineering and improvement problems?
I was raised on the east side, and there is not a street or neighborhood that I have not inspected. I have been active in improvement associations throughout the district. Lincoln Heights and the city badly need the Daly Street Bridge and the opening and widening of major arteries connecting with Ramona Boulevard. On the west side of the district, the need is for adequate storm drainage, transportation, and playgrounds.
And don't forget to take a bow for your fight which reduced the cost of stop signs from $65 to $37.50. Incidentally, somebody asked how it was that you spent your own money in that fight, saving the city about $70,000.
I paid out about $400 of my own money in that suit to compel competitive bidding for stop signs. While the case was on appeal, the city began asking for competitive bids. That is how the cost of stop signs was cut in half. I enjoyed that fight, and I will insist upon further reduction. These stop signs still are costing too much money.
Never satisfied, huh? Maybe you're the answer to the old riddle, if youth but knew and age were able, poverty would be a fable.
Well, it is no fable that Roy Hampton fits the needs of his district and of Los Angeles. He is young enough to have faith in himself and old enough to inspire faith in his judgment and ability.
And now Ernest Chamberlain will interview Carl C. Rasmussen of the 7th District.
Mr. Rasmussen, a critic writes, "Tell these preachers to concern themselves with the golden streets and the pearly gates and keep out of the sewers of politics."
Sure, the man who wrote that letter was no Irishman.
That was Delamere Francis McCloskey of the 1st District, cutting in with his St. Patrick's Day plug. All right, McCloskey. Why was the man who wrote that question no Irishman?
Sure, me japers, he'd be thinking how St. Patrick drove the snakes out of old Ireland and how it might be a good thing to have a snake-driving preacher in the city council.
When an Irishman comes to the rescue of a Danish Lutheran, it consoles us for the fact that our Viking ancestors were finally run out of the Emerald Isle.
That's fine, but the voters want a serious answer. You know, preachers are not noted as practical businessmen.
Well, I was in business for many years. Back in Minnesota, we have many cooperative creameries. As a very young man, I was an official in one of these cooperatives. Later, I traveled for the International Harvester Company in the Midwest. Then, I established my own successful independent hardware store at Lakeside, California, and later became manager of a hardware syndicate.
That was before you entered the ministry?
Yes. I disposed of my business and went back to school in Des Moines, Iowa. I taught in the liberal arts classes while preparing for my ordination as a Lutheran minister. I've had 3 pastorates since then, and don't think that the minister of a metropolitan church has no business problems.
I can realize that. A small businessman told me that you had doubled your congregation and trebled the resources of your church in 4 years' time. But how did you get the friendship of laboring folk which you have?
Well, it developed partly out of my early environment. In part, it was stimulated by my pastorate at Salinas, California, where corporation farming methods brought about a system of some injustice to farm labor in that area. During the Salinas strike of farm workers against the lettuce growers, I deplored the unnecessary use of gas bombs and strong-arm tactics against the workers. Leading parishioners of my church were intimidated. I offered to resign my pastorate, but the congregation unanimously rejected my resignation.
Your opponent, Councilman Davis, is one of those whose defeat has been requested by Mayor Bowron?
Yes. Following a conference with Mayor Bowron, I wish to make it publicly known that the mayor and I are in full accord in our desire and program to give honest, efficient government to the people of Los Angeles. And I am very grateful to have the mayor's consent in making this statement.
That is natural. In view of your activity and in the recall of Mayor Shaw and your general program, what's this about your plan for a district advisory council?
My district, the 7th, represents many social, economic, and racial problems. Business, prosperous residential area, many modest homes of wage earners, and the most concentrated group of Negroes in the city, the East Side area. Pending adoption of a fair redistricting plan, which I advocate, in order to give more voice to minority groups, I propose a district advisory council where leaders from all areas and classes could agree to a fair and just program.
Good for you, Carl Rasmussen. I would say that that's the way a real statesman would handle the problem.
Now, come here, Mr. McCloskey. Don't run away yet. Chamberlain has another question for Delamere Francis McCloskey.
McCloskey, one who signs himself a Wilsonite, says...
You're all wet about holding up franchises to bargain for better transportation rates and services. You ought to know that the Pacific Electric has permanent right-of-way easements in the valley, and they don't need franchises.
Sure, Begorra.
Oh, cut that.
They like to feed us those knockout drops in behalf of the Pacific Electric. Of course it has a permanent easement on its private rights-of-way, but since it has to run on a city street or across a public highway, it needs a franchise.
The writer asks if you do not know that in 1936, when the P.E. ordered all cars west of Van Nuys replaced with buses, the fight was carried to the Railroad Commission, which denied the attempt to establish an independent bus system and ordered the cars to be retained.
Of course I know it. The way to get around it is to use the downtown franchises as a bargaining point to get decent service in the outlying districts.
And he asks, if you don't know that flood control dams are being built by Army engineers with government money.
The pattern for flood control is set by the County Flood Control Agency and executed by the government engineers. But I have a letter in which the federal government states that it will not inflict flood control on us that we do not want, but will give us the kind of flood control that the city council, city flood control engineers, and the people want. The people have not been consulted, but the interests of gravel pit owners and other special privileges apparently have been consulted. The government letter makes it clear that a less costly and a more effective plan would conform thoroughly with sound Army engineering requirements.
And thank you, Delamar Francis McCloskey. And Mr. McCloskey's district is out in the valley. It covers some 200 miles, square miles of area, about half that of the city of Los Angeles.
In the program of our invisible opposition, which follows our 7 o'clock broadcast, we have found one point upon which we agree. The invisible voice says that vice can never be outlawed, and it will always be with us as it always has been, and that the people must control it and keep it within its bounds.
How many times have we repeated that our aim is not to purify the city and make it lily white or to ring the curfew at 9 o'clock, but as an intelligent people to apply that intelligence to the problems which face us? Let us read you a paragraph from a recent statement in which we express our determination to work for public officials who will be open-minded and who will, we hope, and quoting from the statement,
call a conference of leading citizens, sociologists, and governmental experts to conduct a study of the perplexing local vice situation and formulate a program to ensure the emancipation of local government from the control of vice and racketeering influence.
We are glad to have a point of agreement with this program which would make of me a venal dictator of this city for purposes of selfish advancement and corrupt power. I ask only this. If all the invisible voice says were true, can any living person give one iota of proof that I have ever asked or inferred directly or indirectly that I wanted anything from a candidate sponsored by Civic, demanded or suggested any course of action beyond allegiance to the cause of honest, efficient government responsive to every citizen? If I were to build a machine of destructive power, I would have to be working for officials who would be subservient to me, instead of doing all in my power to insist that they be bound to no one. No, my friends, no human being can honestly offer such proof, nor will he ever. And without it, citizens in their homes and businesses need not worry about the terrors of Clintonism. For though I may operate a terrible business, enslave my associates, and seek to exploit, I cannot thus destroy the welfare of the people because no one has to come to my business or to tune in on our radio program.
It is evident that someone behind the invisible voice feels that Clinton must be stopped for some reason, for the attack is unmerciful in its denunciation of a single individual in his business which supports this civic effort. Why?
The exposure of the Shaw machine is applauded by the invisible voice, yet it was accomplished in part by those whom it now attacks. The election of Bowron is applauded, which was made possible in part by those under attack. The truths which have long been told and which you have seen proven are attacked as slanderous, though the results are applauded. Applauded, my friends, until the people are again asked to battle together for the election of a council which will be cooperative with our mayor and with you, the people. Now we ask why, and you will see that the invisible forces know that alone and unaided, split from the people, the council, and the police, the mayor, however strong, can be defeated in his purpose. Without the understanding of the people, without a way to reach them, without a cooperative council, your mandate to the mayor and his determination to carry it out can be thwarted. That is why, and you should know it.
Turn and hear the invisible voice at 7:15 on another station. And now a review of Civic's candidates for the city council.
And the first district.
Delamere Francis McCloskey.
And second.
Norris J. Nelson.
Third.
Stephen Cunningham.
Fourth.
Robert L. Burns.
Fifth.
Arthur E. Briggs.
Sixth.
Chalene V. Eckerson.
Seventh.
Carl C. Rasmussen.
Eighth.
Evan Lewis.
Ninth.
Jack Berman.
Tenth.
G. Vernon Bennett.
11th.
Harold Harby.
12th.
Ralph Gray.
13th.
Roy Hampton.
14th.
George Knox Roth.
15th.
Wilder W. Hartley.
A new one in the list of endorsements. An outstanding independent candidate to cement all interests of the extended 15th district, trusted by business, labor, veteran, and civic leaders. And for the Board of Education.
Lawrence L. Larrabee, Leah Lovell, Elizabeth McManus, and John L. Bogue.
And now we have a word from Aldrich Blake, but Aldrich Blake isn't here. He's too busy in the frontline trenches. Ed, will you read his statement?
Mr. Blake says that he is too busy in the trenches to get here for his usual announcements. He asks us to announce that all precinct leaders in the 13th District, where Roy Hampton is Civic's endorsed candidate, will meet at 3 p.m. Sunday at the Echo Park Mothers Club, 1004 Echo Park Avenue.
Citizens have long been unable to see the invisible forces opposing their united efforts to free themselves. Now, they can at least hear the voice of these invisible people, crying out against the people's determination to organize for their own protection.
Tune in at 7:15 p.m. on another station, and don't miss the anonymous voice of the invisible opposition. Ladies and gentlemen, you have just heard the people's voice, which comes to you four times daily, Monday through Friday, at 9:30 in the morning, 12:30 noon, 7 and 11 p.m. Now back to your announcer.
The People's Voice is made possible by Clifton's and those who contribute a dollar or more a year for good government. Civic Committee is at your service in any matter affecting honest, efficient government. Headquarters, 618 South Olive Street, phone Trinity 1673. KEHE is impartial and assumes no responsibility nor liability for statements made on the foregoing program.